Welcome to episode 13 of 48 Hour Heroes Origin Stories. I have a very special guest here with me today. She is one of my favorite people on the planet, a young woman by the name of Rochelle Henry, who I met when she was just 11 or 12 years old. And it's a funny story that we get into later in the episode about how we met. She showed up at the Seattle Film Summit, and by the end of the day, every single person that attended knew who Rochelle Henry was. She's been a very pleasant presence in my life for 10, 11 years now, and even though we don't see each other much these days, it's always good to catch up and see what incredible things she's up to. So without further ado, let's talk with Rochelle. So it really doesn't matter what you look like, say or do. I know that I had a cooler weekend than you. I have a very special guest with me here today, Rochelle Henry. Welcome, Rochelle.
Thank you so much for having me.
Yeah. I haven't seen you in far too long because, you know, the world went to crap a couple of years ago.
When was the last time I saw you? Was that 2018? 2019, maybe?
Probably 2019.
Right. I think the last time I was in Seattle was September of 2019. I was filming on Martingale. And then I remember I came back to LA. I fully intended on coming back up to Seattle, actually, right as around the time the pandemic started. We were about to come back up, and then pandemic happened. Ugh. Stayed there, haven't been back up since. Which has been a bummer, but you know, I'll come back up soon.
So how did you and I meet?
I remember for sure meeting you. I mean, we might have met prior to that, but I know for sure we met for the 48 in 2012. I was 11 years old and I was working on, I don't remember what their team name was called, but it was Colin and Aaron Neal. And we ended up making a strong, empowered women's film that was a sci-fi. It was kind of about these time-traveling, Rosie the Riveter-esque women. Yeah. And they traveled too far into the future, and they met this space-themed barista who wanted to be a part of our crew. She didn't realize that we were actually time travelers and she wanted to be a part of our crew. And my character was the captain's daughter, and she was really tired of her whole life jumping around between different time warps. And she really just wanted to like go back to the 1940s and just live her life normally. Yeah, that's the premise that I can remember. I think that there were some other subplots in there too, but that was the main.
But yeah, everyone was dressed up like Rosie the Riveter. It was great.
You know what's crazy? Those outfits that we wore, at least the ones that Aaron and I wore, those were real uniforms that we found inside the ship. So they got, I don't know how the whole process worked out, but you know, they secured the ship and to film on it. And I think they gave us clearance to, you know, use the props inside. We had to go down this ladder, down this dark, like passageway, like down this dark hole. We'd have to go down this ladder into kind of this pit area, and there were the uniforms. So going down there was, I don't think I was scared going down there because a few of the adults went down before I did and they were like, it's safe and cool. I think if I was the first person to go down, I'd feel a little bit scared just because it's like the deep, dark unknown. It's like a, you know, dark abyss having to go down in there. But those uniforms were so cool. I remember really loving my uniform and I was so excited to wear it the whole time. Mine was like a little like skipper uniform. It was so cute, and I really liked wearing it for my character.
Well, my memory of meeting you for the first time was at the Seattle Film Summit.
Oh, really?
Yeah, and there was a seminar on networking, and the
the hosts were a little bit late. So there's this room. I remember we were in a room upstairs and all of us just sitting in a circle. Perfect opportunity to network, but we're all just sitting there ignoring each other. And you were, like 11 or 12. And you just stood up and said, "Hi, I'm Rochelle," and started handing out business cards to everyone. We're like, wow. And the children will lead the way. It was so funny. You just stepped
up. I'm starting
up.
To remember that one now. Like,
yeah, you
even
just
kind
introduced
of the building
yourself to
that we
everyone.
Were in.
We all felt like a bunch of idiots. Like, this is, you know, about networking. And we're all sitting there staring at our phones. And I remember Megan Griffiths was one of the panelists. We were just waiting for Megan to show up and not interacting.
Oh, man. Now I'm starting to remember it more clearly. That's really funny. And so I'm guessing that after, like, a few months later was then the 48.
The 48 was after that, yeah.
Okay. Piecing together the timeline.
Yeah, the Seattle Film Summit used to be, like, in the spring. Now they've moved it to the fall. But yeah, after that, you started getting into the 48 and you did a handful of them here in Seattle.
Yeah, I there was a few years where I even was on two teams at once. I did the special genre. I can't remember how many I did in Seattle. I also did...
You've done Portland, right?
Right. I competed one that was once I was a team lead. And then I've also competed in San Diego. But Seattle and LA are the main two that I've competed in. I remember when you hosted the first Seattle Horror.
That was 2013.
That one.
Yeah. That was surprisingly successful.
Everyone loves that one.
Yeah, I'll get shot if I don't run a horror one. I mean, the Pacific Northwest loves horror movies. It's
true,
kind of in our blood. And you know, I love them. You know, my first pet as an adult was my cat Ash, who I named after Bruce Campbell's character in the Evil Dead movies.
You're like, it's meant to be.
Yes. And it's been an insanely successful event every year. But so when did you move to LA? Officially moved. I know you were like flying down a lot at a certain point.
Actually, we were driving down a lot. It wasn't even flying. Yeah. I started going back and forth, I think October of 2015. But I kind of officially became LA in 2020 just because of the fact that I haven't been back up since. So, I mean, I was starting to be more in LA over time, but I was still spending, you know, chunks of time up in Seattle. But I think that, I mean, I didn't really ever have like an official day, but I think it kind of happened because of the pandemic. I kind of just stayed here. And I think that that's kind of officially when I more became living in LA than Seattle. Yeah. So, but for years it was back and forth, spending lots of time in both, working in both. It was really an organic thing because I wasn't ever expecting, well, I mean, I guess eventually I thought maybe I would move to LA, but I didn't have like a set plan of like when exactly I would do it. And I still consider myself like a PNW girl at heart. Like I'm still, you know, like I'm still that girl from Seattle.
Your formative years were here, really.
I consider myself West Coastal because I consider myself, you know, West Coast born and raised because I still am on the West Coast. You know, that still is who I am. And yeah, so it's interesting. That's an interesting question because I didn't ever make the official, I didn't really think official plan of like, I'm moving to LA this month, this year. It happened. So, yeah.
You finished high school and college in LA, right?
I'm still, I graduate with my bachelor's in June.
Oh, wow.
So, yeah. And then I'm hoping to get my MBA. So I'm currently getting ready for that.
Wow. So. what was your major?
Marketing.
Marketing.
Digital
okay.
marketing. Yeah. And I'm hoping with my MBA that I can get a focus in marketing, because it's interesting. I originally was going to go for just a business degree. But when I was taking the classes, they had a lot of marketing classes involved with it. And when I'm taking them, I'm like, okay, this is really interesting. I really like this subject. And I made the switch. I was close to having my associates in business. Like I was, I don't know, 5-6 classes away. But I decided I wanted to pursue marketing as opposed to just business. And it still is a business degree. I found that I was more passionate about it. It was more creative. And it fulfilled both my like, you know, techie and business brain, but also like the creative art side as well. And so I decided to go ahead and, you know, take the classes required for marketing and pursue that full on. And I really like the choice I made. I really like everything I've been learning with it, especially because it really also can tie in amazingly with the film industry, because a large part of the entertainment industry is marketing, you know, whether it's distributing your film or it's, you know, Netflix and Hulu promoting their platforms and their movies.
Oh, that was Amy Lillard's job before she became the Washington State, you know, film commissioner.
Yeah.
She worked on marketing for the Blair Witch Project.
Really? I didn't know that.
Yeah.
Wow. Yeah. It's, and also like things like social media for like promoting public figures and also your films and things like that. So I already had like a passion for it. I guess I just didn't, you know, think about it in terms of, okay, what am I going to get a degree in? I can take what I already really like in it and what I've already been really passionate about and have kind of been doing for years, but actually like learn more and channel it in a more official way. And when I made that choice to switch from just business to marketing, I was really excited about, and I'm still like, I'm constantly finding new things that I'm learning that I get really excited to learn.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm happy with the choice I made, especially because it works so well with the entertainment industry.
Yes. Yes.
Yeah. I think personally it was the best choice for me to make with that.
Well, just that you decided to pursue a degree, I think is a very, very smart choice.
Thank you.
There's a lot of young actors who are like, okay, I'm just going to go wait tables, you know, straight out of high school and wait, you know, work my butt off to, you know, get my break.
Right.
Very, very, very seriously work.
Exactly.
And, you know, build a career. But I think not having, you know, a base of knowledge or, you know, a focus of knowledge to supplement what it's.
I know what you mean. And like you were saying, for some people that works, and for other people, you know, you need more of that foundation and like a base to go off of. And I'm really glad that because I've had people ask me, why aren't you getting a drama degree? Why aren't you getting a degree from film school? And for me personally, since I have the years of hands-on experience in the film industry and I intend on, you know, continuing to learn hands-on with it, but I like the idea of having, you know, an official degree in something that ties in with it, but isn't only that and can work for other things too. And the pandemic especially, I mean, because I was already in college when the pandemic happened, but the pandemic really showed, you know, that you need to be prepared and that everything can shut down, especially the film industry. Everything can shut down. And what are you going to do? And it was a blessing for me because I was then able to, because I was already in college, but it, you know, the whole time during the pandemic, I was, other than the projects I was working on, because I did work on a few projects, but I was really like hunkered down pursuing my degree, I got my associates. And then now I graduate in a few months. And I'm, for me, it was a blessing that I had that time to work on it.
Yeah, I think it's a smart move because I'm listening to a lot of podcasts now. And I don't know if you've heard the Smartless podcast.
I don't think I have.
So it's Will Arnett, Jason Bateman, and Sean Hayes. And it's super, super funny. But you get to hear, and they talk to people like Tom Hanks and Stephen Colbert. They get big names on it. Ron Howard. And like you hear Jason Bateman, who came out as a child actor and now, you know, 20 plus years an adult. So he learned the filmmaking end and then had to learn the business end. And that's ultimately where I think a kind of the stumbling point for a lot of Seattle, Washington filmmakers is not taking it seriously as a business. And learn that the hard way, that creativity alone isn't gonna get you where you need to be.
Right.
You know, unless you're like a Wes Anderson or a P.T. Anderson.
Right. Exactly. And even then, I think, you know, like with Wes Anderson, for example, I think that him having his own little niche, his own little genre, because I don't even think it's like any other genre. It's like he has his own kind of like style and genre.
Yeah.
It really, that's kind of a smart business move. He's the only Wes Anderson, you know, nobody else can do what Wes Anderson does the way Wes Anderson does it. And he markets it that way. And I think that even that, he like really sets himself apart.
Yeah.
It's, yeah. But also like he has the creativity to balance that, you know, it's interesting.
Yeah. Yeah. Cause you know, if you take the route of learning the filmmaking side, achieving a certain level of success, you're going to have to learn the business side. And you know, I know even for me, learning the business side of things is, I hate that. I just want to be editing or goofing around in Photoshop or recording a podcast. But, you know, I got to get the name out there, stick to some sort of a brand identity and all this stuff I just don't want to do. But it's imperative that you do it.
Exactly.
So from my perspective, I think it's easier to learn the filmmaking side of things in a non-academic environment.
Agreed.
And learn the business side of things in an academic environment. Because filmmaking is so much, it's so collaborative and so much knowledge is just being shared almost out of necessity.
Right. And you're
on set.
Yeah. And with filmmaking, it's not always, you know, like when you're learning something new, it's not, you know, it's not handed to you as though like, this is a lesson you have to learn. It's one of those things that you're in the middle of, you know, making a movie and you're learning these lessons. You're working with these professionals. You're taking bits and pieces of their knowledge. You're learning lessons even on your own work and how you were on set. I've always loved the collaborative nature of filmmaking. That's what I really love about it.
Yeah, that's what drew me to it as well. I've always been a visual arts kind of person. So, you know, my first failed attempt through college, I was a political theory and photography major.
Oh, really?
Yeah, at UC Santa Cruz.
That's awesome.
But back in the early 90s, the photography department at UC Santa Cruz wasn't very good. So we spent a lot of time talking about, in a very Santa Cruz sort of way, talking about our feelings and what things meant. And I remember the transfer students from Cabrillo Community College came in into third year photography and their prints are immaculate. So first day of class, we put our stuff up and all of us that had come through the UCSC photography program, our stuff is all dusty and spotty and we're talking about how it makes us feel and the theme. These transfer students come in and their stuff is immaculately framed, spotted, perfect exposure.
Wow. Like,
oh, man. I wish we kind of focused on technique a little more rather than just the ideas.
Right. And that's something that I think is really important, even with academics. And that's something that I'm glad with, like, the program I'm in, is that our teachers, and especially with our head of department, they're really focused on making sure that we understand, like, the inside of the marketing agency and, like, how it works, the real world kind of feeling, and not just, like, textbook. Like, they want us to do group projects all the time, and they want us to handle ourselves as though we're in an office space working with coworkers and that we're doing these pitches to clients. Now, there's been stuff I've had to learn. So I'm currently part-time working with a marketing firm right now, actually. And I'm learning a lot of stuff that they can't really teach in the college environment, because running ads, like, because I'm having to run ads for clients, you can't really teach that. Because in the practical application of it, is they can teach it. They can teach certain things, but they can't teach the practical application side of it. Like running ads on Google, you can't really do that in the college environment.
Yeah.
We can learn about how to set it up, but not the actual, the practical, application of it going on. So it's, even that, it's been interesting, and I'm glad I'm doing both at the same time. So I'm getting both the way the school's teaching it, and then also real world, and taking bits and pieces from them. I feel like it'll make me really strong in it in the end.
And that's, yeah, that's exactly the thing, that there are, especially in something that's so technology driven.
Right.
Academia can't really keep up with what's going on, you know, in the real world of commerce, essentially.
Right.
And even in, you know, in filmmaking, you can learn, you know, the basics of exposure and lighting and whatnot. But just as an editor, I mean, I have to keep up with so many different file formats and resolutions and codecs and all this stuff. It's, there's no way that could be taught to you.
Right.
In an academic environment, because technology changes so, so, so quickly. You can be taught film, shooting actually on film, because that fundamentally hasn't changed in 120 years. But the moment you get into the digital world of filmmaking, it's a different beast from when I got into the industry in 2001. Completely different.
Right. And even, like, even if I look back at, like, old projects I've done, the cameras have developed so much in the last few years. You know, you're constantly hearing about Red has a new this, that, and the other, and so does Ari. They have all these new forms, and they do new things, and keeping up with them all the time. And then you have the smaller camera companies who are developing new technology, who are starting to get to the higher level of, like, these other cinema cameras. And it's starting to become a real conflict for, you know, like, young cinematographers starting out of, like, what camera do I get? Do I wait to buy an expensive one? And by then, are they going to have a new thing that's going to be better? What do I do?
Well, I got some great advice when I was working at Modern Digital, an old post-production house in Seattle. And I was giving a lecture on the HD Final Cut Pro workflow coming into Modern Digital. And Rich Fascio, one of the co-owners of the company, he gave me the greatest bit of advice to include regarding choosing your camera. And even though the terminology has changed a little bit since then, this is probably 2006, 2007. So things are radically different since then. There's no good time to buy a piece of technology that's going to be not necessarily obsolete, but it's going to be upped
right
by something else in a couple of months. And he just said, pick the format you want to shoot in, you know, HD, 2K back then, and find the camera that has the highest bit rate of recording at your price point. So it's, Matt, you know, getting the most within your budget possible. So basically, and that's why I wound up with, or, you know, around 2010, when the DSLRs were exploding all over the place, I didn't go with the Canon 5D. I went with the Canon 7D, which was significantly less expensive and it wasn't full frame, but I just needed something that could shoot HD and function as a still camera. And I took that advice from Rich right into my purchasing.
Wow.
That. And I still have that camera. It's not terribly useful anymore. It's more useful as a still camera now, but yeah, there's no good time.
No, I remember when I was able to remember all the names of the current Red cameras that were out. I can remember the numbers. Now they have so many out there. They're on so many new editions of them, new styles.
Yeah.
I haven't even tried to keep up at this point because they've just been developing so much new technology and it's really hard to keep up.
Yeah. I've been doing media manager, digital loader stuff for 4.5 years at this point. Just learned that I really kind of like that role on a project. Show up, transfer the data, make sure it's backed up and secure, and then go home and all of my emotional energy is mine. I can put my creative energy towards my stuff rather than right. sweat what I'm working on set. And the number of card readers I need to own. I was doing a job a couple of weeks ago, and luckily Dominic Barbaro was kind enough to give me a crash course on some wireless monitor gadgets that I might come into contact with on this job. So I gathered up all of my card readers and very end of the day, sound guy comes in and goes, all right, hands me a CF card. I have not seen a CF card in easily 3.5 years. And so of course I didn't bring a CF card reader.
Oh.
And then they also brought in a second, I can't remember what format it was. It was like, oh, God, I didn't even know this one existed. But luckily they had a card reader for me. So, you know, just keeping up with technology is very difficult.
It is. It's crazy.
Especially when you have companies like Sony that are making all their own proprietary formats.
Right.
That don't work with anyone else's stuff. It's very expensive.
Yeah. And that's the thing too, is you know, when you're trying to keep up with it, you know, and with companies like Sony doing that, you don't have all the tools if you're trying to work with other products, you know, you have to get Sony's and that, and it's hard to keep up.
Yeah. Well, keeping up, I mean, I want to bring this back to the 48.
Yes.
And I know I get a thank you text message every so often from Leanne and Michael Westfall in LA. They say, oh, thank you. Thank you so much for getting Rochelle into the 48 in Seattle and loaning her out to us.
I love you guys.
They adore you.
I love Leanne and Michael and I love you. You guys are the consistent city producers that I work with, and I adore both groups so much.
Well, it's interesting seeing the differences and the commonalities
right
between Los Angeles and LA. I remember in 2016, I surprised the crap out of you.
I was so excited when you showed up. and what's funny is we had seen, so when we were driving over there, my grandparents were looking out the window and they're like, that looks like Kirk. They're like, it probably isn't, but that looks like Kirk. And I was like, oh, okay. And like, you can see we're walking down the street. And then when we finally did see you, it was like, what? How are you here? And it was so exciting. I still, whenever I look at that photo, you can see the pure joy. And I'm like bright red with excitement. It was such, that was such a great day. Well, and thank you so much for coming.
Yeah, let me put this into some context. So you, this is early on in your time, in your stint of spending time in Los Angeles, back and forth. And that was one of your first LA 48s, wasn't it?
That was my first. That was my first as a team lead.
Team leader.
It was, I think, my second in LA, but it was my first as a team lead.
Yeah, so, and that was, I think it was in April or something.
It was.
Really early that year.
Because Leanne was pregnant and because it would have fallen on her due date originally. Yeah. Yeah.
So, around April, March, April, I start going absolutely nuts in Seattle because, you know, I spent age 7 to 23 in San Jose, you know, the Bay Area. So, I'm a Californian at heart. So I start going a little nuts without seeing the sun. And I remember Regan McStravick came over.
Yes.
For barbecue or something. And we were talking. It was like, oh yeah, the Rochelle's going to be screening in the 48 down there on this day. And so I texted Michael and Leanne and said, okay, which screening group is she in? And yeah, then Regan and I said, yeah, let's go surprise her. And he was going to be down in LA anyway on a job. And I just needed to get the hell out of Dodge for a little bit and decided to drive down and shoot some stock photography as I was going. And yeah, then we decided, yeah, let's show up at the screening and surprise her.
That was the best surprise. Thank you guys for coming. It was really, that was a great surprise. And I was so excited. I had a lot of people show up for that screening, but it was so kind of you guys to show up. And it was really great to have other, you know, like my Seattle family, you know, the 48 group.
Kay Whitney was down there.
Right. Yeah. There was multiple people that I invited that showed up and it was, I love that group photo that we all took. That was a fun. And what was cool about the team I had is that we had people that were in LA. We had people that were from Seattle. We had people that had moved down, like our editor. He had actually trained with Lynn Shelton.
Oh, nice.
Yeah. And so he was PNW then now in LA and it was, or I think, yeah. And we also had Portland people involved too. It was a mix of Seattle, LA and Portland all on one team. And it honestly couldn't have been a better group. And yeah, it was wonderful. And I had no idea how the film would do. I mean, I thought it was going to turn out good. But I didn't expect the reaction. I still have people in LA who, when they come to the 48 in LA, they're like, you look familiar. They're like, have I seen one of your films? And I'm like, did you see the pickpocket one? And they're like, that one? And so they remember it based on that. And you know, not just at the 48, I've had other people who weren't even competing or who, when they've, you know, shown it to people or they have friends that were also involved in it, then they meet me and they, you know, they're like, you look really familiar. How did we, I actually, on the set of the Netflix project, I can't say what the name is. One of the people that was on their COVID unit was talking to me and she goes, you look really familiar. How do I know you? And so she and I were talking. We were trying to figure it out. And she goes, wait, were you at the 48 in 2016? And I was like, yeah, in LA. And she's like, yeah. And I was like, yeah, I was. I had a team that year. And she's like, which film was yours? She's like, I was just there watching some friends. And I was like, do you remember the one of the pickpockets? And she's like, that one? And I was like, yeah. And it was like so random. Like I didn't expect on this random. Yeah. I mean, we were just, it was in between takes. And they of course had, you know, their COVID unit checking on everything. And so she was just talking to me between takes. Because my character, I can't say anything, but my character was in close contact with a few people. So they needed to make sure that everything was A-okay. And so she was, it was cool because we were talking while they were setting up. And I did not expect the 48 to be to how we had met. And I think we also had like another project in common too. We had a random film in San Diego that we both worked on as well. It was... You never know who you're going to meet and who you're going to run into again. I love those little connections. It's really a small world.
Yeah. And when you get into the 48 and you do it a couple of years, especially if you do it in a couple of cities, you really are building a pretty robust social and professional network.
It's true.
And, you know... A lot of my favorite people in this whole world are, you know, attached either as participants in the 48 or as city producers or as headquarters staff. And it's pretty amazing how far flung that network can reach. It's literally all over the world.
It's incredible. And I'm really glad. I'm really grateful for the LA 48 community. Like we even have one of the team leaders, he would even hold his own like 48 team leader events, like outside of the 48.
Nice.
And that was prior to the pandemic. There hasn't been one since. But they were really fun. And I love that the community, you know, they really welcomed me into the group. And that if like, let's say, when we're in the middle of doing the 48 and one team reaches out to another and says, hey, I just lost my editor. Do you have an idea of one? Hey, I need a location. Everyone is willing to help everyone. You know, it's, you have each other's backs and it's like really friendly competition, you know,
I'm going to win. I'm going to win.
Right. There was like one time where I think it was this last one that I did. It's hard to keep track of all of them, but the last one that the LA one did, I wasn't able to be a part of it because I was in the middle of filming and I had to keep my dates open and all of that. One of the teams that I knew, they asked me if I knew of some actors. And so I recommended two actors and they ended up, you know, giving me casting director credit on it. But it was great to get, you know, to still be a part of the team and to still have a team to root for. And of course, like when I go to the screenings, I get so excited when my friends, you know, films pop up.
Yeah.
I get excited to reunite with them. And, you know, I really like that the whole, you know, like when they do the awards show, everyone is cheering for each other. And it's genuine. You're wanting other people to. And actually, I was able to present a few of the awards at the award ceremony this last time.
Oh, nice.
It was fun. I really was grateful that Lana Michael let me be a part of it, even if I couldn't, because I wanted to. I was getting ready to sign up. And the times that I don't sign up, it's like, well, okay, sometimes I do sign up and then I have to back out. But the times that I'm not able to do it, there's always like this big like tug, like I want to do it. I really, really want to do it. But I have XYZ reasons why I'm not able to this time. And I fully intend on doing them again. It just depends on the schedule. But I'm really glad that I was still able to participate because the 48 is a big family and community for me. Mm-hmm. So to still be a part of it was really.
Yeah, we're hoping. So Filmapalooza is starting next week.
Ooh.
So this time, today is March 1st. This time next week, I will be in DC getting ready to help with the screenings and run it. And, you know, our last film, Apalooza, happened in Rotterdam days before the world shut down.
Oh, right.
It was
I was trying to remember. I was actually thinking about this today. I was trying to remember if the film Apalooza that I was a speaker on was in 2020 or 2021. And I think it was 2021 because.
Yes.
I remembered that there was a film Apalooza that like days later.
Virtual. Yeah.
Pandemic happened.
Yeah. Yeah. It was. Yeah. Rotterdam. First week of March 2020. There's 500 of us and. Just running around Rotterdam.
Freedom before the world shut down.
Exactly. Yeah, I got a tattoo with two of my friends. You probably haven't seen the tattoo, have you?
I saw it in the official like 48 trailer. I would watch it and I would pause it and I'd be like, "There's Kirk!" And like at the screening, one of the actors I brought on is my good friend Rico Anderson. And this guy, he ended up winning Best Supporting Actor It was either Best Supporting or Runner. I can't remember. The guy's been on SWAT. He's been on Star Trek. This guy is, he's the real deal. And I got him on for the 48 I was helping cast. And so he was sitting next to me. And I was like, okay, when the trailer comes up, I'll tell you which one is my friend Kirk. And I was like, yeah, Kirk, and when the trailer went by, he's like, that was him. And I'm like, yep, that's my friend Kirk. I pointed out which one. I was like, he has a sick 48 tattoo. He's like a great city producer. I'll let you know which one he is when it comes to fun screen.
Oh, that was so much fun because there were three of us that got the tattoos.
Oh, wow.
Chris Cherry, co-producer of Toronto, and our friend Indra, who now helps produce Eindhoven and Arnhem in the Netherlands. So we all decided to get the 48 tattoo. We went to this famous place in Rotterdam called Tattoo Bob, and the local media was there. It was crazy. And since I've been producing the longest of the bunch of us, I'm like, no, I have to get the first one. I'm pulling seniority on you here.
Did you guys' tattoos end up on the news?
Yes.
That's hilarious.
The Rotterdam News. Yeah, it was hilarious. And luckily, Indra's a native speaker, so she could translate for us. But yeah, it was just insanity because when I left through SeaTac, so I flew SeaTac to Reykjavik to Amsterdam. Flight out there, February 28th or 29th. SeaTac is packed. Reykjavik is packed. Amsterdam is packed. Flight home, Amsterdam packed. Reykjavik packed. Seattle was a ghost town. I got through customs in under 10 minutes.
Wow.
I waited longer for my luggage to show up than it took to get through customs. It was crazy.
Wow. I can't even imagine.
So much cheese. So much Gouda I brought back from that trip.
You were cheesing.
Oh, yeah. The Dutch know their cheese. So what's your plan going forward?
I'm still auditioning for a lot of amazing projects. I have a really great team, and they're very excited about this year and the possibilities. I can't really say anything about those, but it's looking pretty, I'm pretty optimistic. And then I have two TV series that I shot in 2021 that should be coming out. One of them, I can actually say the title and can actually give you the release date now. So I'm in this series. I'm on two episodes of this Stars series called Gaslit. And it stars Julia Roberts and Sean Penn, Dan Stevens, Whoa. Betty Gilpin. Shea Whigham. There's a lot of amazing actors in this one. It's actually about the Watergate scandal, and it's done from a different perspective. It's done from Julia Roberts' perspective because she plays Martha Mitchell, who is the wife of his name was John Mitchell, and he was involved in Watergate. If you go see the trailer, it's a great trailer. It looks exciting. And I think that it comes out April 4th. And so I'm in episode 2 and 3. So it'll be the following 2 weeks. Actually, a friend of mine from the 48, funny enough, is in the trailer. If you watch the trailer, my friend, he's an actor in LA. His name's Michael King. And he's the second voice you hear in the trailer. And when they cut to finally showing him, he is the guy interviewing Julia Roberts' character.
Oh, wow.
So he made it into the trailer. When I watched it, because what's funny is I was at something and I came home and my grandparents were like, oh, did you see that, like, Hollywood Reporter just put out, like, the release date for Gaslyn? And I was like, no. And so then I Google and I look and it says that the trailer's now out. And I'm so excited. I pull it up on the TV, you know, I put it up there and I'm watching it. And when my friend's all in there, I immediately grab the phone. I text him like, you made it into the trailer. And it was so exciting. So
can I just break in here for a second?
Yeah.
I love your grandparents.
I do too. Your they love you too.
Grandparents are the greatest.
They love and miss you. Yeah, but that's funny because how I met that actor was on the 48, not one that I was team leader, though I met the team leader on that one when I was a team leader. We were, you know, our films were competing. And like I said, the different team leaders, we all have a really strong bond. And when I wasn't able to produce one of my friends was like, hey, will you be in mine? And so I acted in theirs. And that's how I met that actor that's in the Gaslit trailer.
Cool.
So it's so cool how you meet so many people that, you know, you never expected would be such a big part of your life. You know, really close friends. It's amazing. I'm really grateful for the 48 for that, for building such a strong community. But anyway, and you were asking me about other projects.
Yeah.
There's a Netflix one that I cannot say the name of. I will say that it is one that, while Gaslit is a new series, this one's an already established Netflix series that you've probably seen. I can't say which one. It's a popular series, though. And it was an honor to be a part of it. I worked with one of the leads, and that person was the kindest person ever. And just the whole experience was amazing. That's all I can say about it. I can give a cool story about the trailer though.
Okay.
I can't give details on the story, anything like that, but I show up and I was expecting, you know, because they in the contract put, you know, that you have a trailer that you're going to sit in for a few hours. And especially with COVID, while in the past you used to be able to kind of, you know, meander and craft services and talk to people, now that's no longer the case. So, you know, you have your trailer that you're going to go to, which still feels very weird for me to say. This is the second time. That was the second time I've ever had a trailer. But they were walking me over. I had to do my COVID test. They walked me over. And when they're checking me in, they're like, oh, so we don't have the regular trailer we would be giving you. This one's going to be an upgraded one. I hope you don't mind. And I'm like, I don't mind. And it was attached to one of the main characters' trailers. They weren't working that day, but the trailer attached to mine was theirs. They bring me in and it's massive. It has a kitchen. It has a bathroom with a shower. It has a sectional couch. It has a desk. It has a mini fridge. It had a safe. It had like a little like vanity table, big TV. I didn't have time to like touch or do anything with any of these things because I was only on set for a few hours. But oh, and it even had a fireplace too. And
oh my God.
It was sparkling white, gorgeous. And I was like, wow, this is so cool. So I was soaking up every moment I had in there. Because I was only in there. I think I was only in the trailer for maybe an hour and a half split up time because they would have to like take me over to other trailers for hair and makeup and wardrobe. So I think I maybe spent like a total of an hour and a half in there. But that was so exciting. I was fangirling over that. And of course, like, you know, keeping the calm, like, you know, I didn't show the inner fangirling. I'm really good about that, not showing the inner fangirling, but on the inside, I was elated. But I could, that's all I can tell you about that one. Though,
now, when you're meeting the famous people, it really is hard to maintain your cool.
I think that one of the reasons why I don't really, there's been times where I'm internally fangirling, but for the most part, you know, I just think of them as people.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, and it's cool. I really appreciate, especially, you know, a lot of them, I would say, I think pretty much every celebrity I've ever met is really nice. And so the conversation that I've had with them have been really nice too. And so I've really enjoyed that. And like with this set, it was just a wonderful experience. I can't even put into words how amazing it was. But the other things I have coming up, I have Martingale should release, I think this year. We did pick up shots in 2021. So that one should release. And then the other thing I shot in 2021 is called Bermuda Island. And that one was fun to do because I play a flight attendant. So that one was, I'm excited for that one. It was cool getting to play that sort of a role.
I'm so looking forward to traveling, and I think Chris and I want to do a corporate retreat to kind of plan out our year for the 48 in Seattle, and we're starting it up in Montana again.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, we're going to do it statewide, not by a single city. So hopefully we would be doing screenings in Billings, Bozeman, and Missoula.
Oh, wow. That'll be cool.
Yeah. But I haven't been to LA since, I think, 2018.
Wow.
2019? I can't remember.
Because I remember, were you there another time that I was competing? But that time I knew that you were going to be there. I feel like there was a time where you were helping out. And I knew that you were going to be there.
The award ceremony.
Right.
Yeah.
That was like 2018. That time I knew you were going to be there. I was still very excited. But that one you had told me that you were going to be there.
Yeah, and I usually come down for Holly Shorts as well.
Yeah, I haven't been to Holly Shorts in a while.
Yeah, that's a good festival. I really like Holly Shorts.
It is. So, that one was really well done.
But yeah, I think maybe I'll talk to Chris and see if we can plan our corporate retreat in LA.
That would be fun. I would really love to see you and Chris. I can't remember the last time I saw her. I think maybe 2017.
That's been a while.
I think it was then because she actually directed one of them that I was a team leader on. That was actually an LA.
I remember that.
It was
that.
An LA one.
Yeah.
But we shot it up in Seattle because I was filming my Summers of Goth in Portland and I couldn't be back down in time. So I had people who were, you know, going there for the drop off and kickoff, you know, getting, they were handling it on the ground there, but yeah. I wasn't going to be able to be back in LA in time, especially because I was in between shoot dates. But that worked out great. And it was really fun to work with Chris on that in that
capacity.
Yeah,
she's fantastic.
I love her.
Yeah. Asking her to be my co-producer was the single smartest decision I've made at running the 48 in Seattle. So
I remember for that Freehold Directors class.
Yeah.
Because you were also a part of it too.
Yeah. That's where we met.
Right. Because I was working with Chris on her her project on that one.
I remember.
Yeah.
Thinking back to that. Because, yeah, you were 13 or 14
right
at that point.
And Gene Torkelson was the other. I miss him so much. He was so wonderful. When I watched that scene, you probably know which one I'm talking about. That really dramatic, intense scene. I watch it and I honestly try to think of any celebrity actors that I think would have done a better job, and I can't think of anyone.
No.
Gene was made for that role, and he was just so incredible. And he was the nicest person alive, too.
Yeah.
He was just wonderful.
Well, when Chris and Becky and I got to go to Norway with him, that was such I'm not a crier by nature, but on that, when we knew that Gene was basically saying goodbye to his family with each stop that we made, Chris, Becky and I were just bawling half the time we were there. And I remember I got to, there was like some drama involving his stepsister being there, and it got really, really weird at one point. And we were in downtown Oslo, and Gene wanted to find his sister, and Becky and Chris went to go find some place to park. And Gene and I are just walking down the main strip in Old Town Oslo. And he's telling me stories about, oh yeah, I had an apartment over there and I worked in that building, and just pointing out all this stuff. And like, I'm so glad I got to see Gene's Oslo. I got to see Gene's
right.
Because I'd been there once before, you know, when Kasia and I went. But yeah, just getting a little slice of, you know, younger Gene's life was so much fun.
Yeah, he just...
So much fun.
He was always so positive, and he just radiated joy. Like, there's a photo of, and actually Becky and Chris are in this photo too, and another one of Gene's friends. And we were at a SIFF screening for a movie called The Last King. And it was, I think, a film that was filmed in Norway. And the photo that we were doing, it was a complete candid. We are dying of laughter in the picture. And I every once in a while still put it back up as my cover photo, even though it's gotta be like 6-7 years old, because it's just such, like, you can't get candid moments like that. You can't plan that.
Yeah, exactly.
And that was like a genuine Gene smile. And yeah, so I'm really grateful that you and I both got to spend a lot of time with Gene.
Yeah.
Well, everyone needed some Gene in their life, you know?
Yeah, one of my favorite moments. So we flew Seattle to Amsterdam, Amsterdam to Oslo, picked up our car, and that we were based out of, it's like ski resort town just outside of Lillehammer up in the hills in a cabin. It was super, super cozy and nice and very, very, very Norwegian. And excuse me, we bought a bunch of food because there was a kitchen. We were going to try and save money by cooking a lot. But first morning, Gene and I wake up, we're like, we are going to the cafeteria and we are getting European hotel breakfast. Chris and Becky had no idea why we were so excited about this. But you know, they had soft boiled eggs and, you know, homemade bread and,
oh man,
fresh yogurt and fruit. And there's just something different about European hotel breakfast. You know, I was like, da, 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 da.
I can imagine you guys like dashing in there, just like super excited.
We were both,
I can picture it.
We were both super excited about the soft boiled eggs.
So what was the highlight of your trip? The soft boiled eggs.
No, really the highlight is we stopped. We're driving back from Oslo to Lillehammer, and we had to stop at a gas station. And it was a really long day, a bunch of interviews, and we were all super tired. And we stopped at the gas station to fill up. And we all wanted hot dogs. So in Norway, you can get bacon wrapped hot dog.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. Called a bacon pulsa. And, you know, get it on a bun or something like that. But do you know what lefse is?
No.
So it's the Norwegian potato tortilla, basically. It's the Norwegian version of the tortilla, but it's potato based. And so I take up the, you know, I said, oh, I'd like a bacon pulsa, please. And he said, oh, do you want that with lefse? And I'm like, hell yeah, I want that with lefse. Lefse with onions. And he's like, most Americans don't want the lefse. And I'm like, they're all wrong. They are wrong.
Oh, that makes me want to go travel there.
You have to. You
Sounds
have
like
to.
Fun.
Yeah. I mean, you're young. You got to go see the world.
Yeah, I'd love to go see there. There's so many places that I'd love to travel to.
But yeah, you got to go see Europe. And
I would love to.
Yeah.
That'd be amazing.
Yeah. Well, Rochelle, I got to call it here because the dog is informing me that I'm not paying enough attention to her.
Oh.
And yeah, next time you're in Seattle, you got to come and meet Darby and Tony.
Yes, I'd love to. Yeah, hopefully I'll be back up in a few months. I'm hoping I'll be back up in June for my graduation.
Oh, excellent. You'll have to come over and have pizza in our pizza oven.
That'd be awesome. Oh, yeah. I remember that you got that done.
Well, Kasha built it. That's all her. I helped move some stuff. That's it. The rest was all her.
She's amazing. Yep, I love her.
Yeah, you got to see all the changes that have taken place at Foxglove Hollow here. Well, Rochelle, I miss you terribly.
Me too. I miss you.
Can't wait to see you again in person.
Yes.
And please keep me updated on everything.
I will. Thank you so much for having me on this. I mean, it was just so great to catch up. It's been way too long.
Well, it's fun because, you know, we're good enough friends that it feels like no time has passed.
Right. I'm looking at the clock and I didn't even, you know, that felt like no time at all.
It was 90 minutes of recording.
It felt like 10 minutes.
Yeah, minus 4 minutes for me to go let the guy drop off the air conditioner. All right, Rochelle. Well, I'm gonna type the crap out of you in the show notes, and I can't wait to see you again.
Yeah, me too. It was so great to see you.
So good to see you. So it really doesn't matter what you look like, say or do.
And you. 48 Hour Heroes Origin Stories is a production of Media Without Borders and the Seattle 48 Hour Film Project.